Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man, a Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madman
and talk about it.
So excited for all of you to join us out here for one of the most special episodes of Mad Yourself a Man. Los Angeles is currently burning to the ground.
And Los Angeles is burning. Sorry, I had to do my bad religion thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But it is. Fires on the streets of Los Angeles. I'm doing April 22nd, 1992. Mm-hmm. You know Sublime. Let it burn, wanna let it burn. So everything's burning. I'm over at my parents' house right now, because it's not burning, because my mommy and daddy keep me safe from fire. So it's very exciting. This might end up being a shorter episode than usual, which means, you know, no time for dilly-dallying, no time for jokey jokes. We're just doing straight analysis of Mad Men, a show about how sometimes, you know, you were in Korea and you tried to smoke a cigarette, but you pissed yourself. And then in an attempt to wipe the piss off your pants, which is not a thing, you drop your lighter and it blows up the real Don Draper. Mm-hmm. That's what the show is about.
That turned out to be the real lucky strike, if you asked me.
We're going to be talking about this episode.
Yes.
But please, 5 stars and a review on all the podcast apps. We recently got a review, I didn't appreciate it. It was a 5-star review, but it didn't really, it wasn't a nice comment. And here it is.
Mr. Campbell. Who cares?
Who cares is what the person commented.
I get it.
Not nice. Yeah. Very mean. Okay. We're going to be talking about from season 1 of The Mad Men, episode 12, Nixon versus Kennedy. And our guest.
I like how you go full Ira Glass now with the clip and the review. It's great.
Yeah, I realize that that's an Ira Glass thing, okay? I realized that at a certain point, and I was like,
but I'm Ira Glass, and I like to do at least
sucks.
One joke
I'm sorry. I,
per episode.
I'm not going to talk shit on This American Life. I can't pretend like I don't listen to it sometimes, and it has good stories occasionally. And a name like Meeky Meek, come on, cool name.
Yeah.
But that ending thing where they play the clip, it doesn't work. This works.
Mm.
Our guest today is a wonderful guest. Our guest is from the wonderful Hollywood Crime Scene podcast. Great friend of the show. Returning Pod Yourself champion. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Rachel Fisher.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
How's the fire?
It's smoky outside in Echo Park, and I'm just praying I don't have to evacuate because I have 4 cats.
Oh, hey, that's my cousin Smokey.
It's so smoky.
Outside. Let me in.
Just stop.
Sorry.
No, I mean, it is. I had to evacuate my neighborhood, but it's like a level 2 evacuation. It's not like a you're on fire. It's like a you better get out, guys.
Where are you?
Now I'm on the west side. I'm over at my
parents. I know,
parents
but
house.
Where's your neighborhood?
I'm going to tell you where my parents are. Culver City.
No, where did you evacuate from?
Oh, from Eagle Rock. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I know. Overnight, dude. Like, I was asleep and my sister had already evacuated Altadena. And then, I was like, you know, oh, damn, that sucks for you. Should be a renter. And then I woke up and I was like, man, the power's still out. And then the phone buzzed and I was like, not another Amber Alert. I don't know where they are. Stop asking me. And then it wasn't an Amber Alert. It was a please leave your house alert.
Did you see the clip where the local news was talking to this guy and the guy on the street was talking about how, you know, if you're going to abandon your cars because the road is on fire, like leave the keys in them so the fire department doesn't have to bulldoze your car out of the way. And the interviewer was like, oh, thank you. That's great advice, sir. What is your name? Can I get your name? And he's like, yeah, it's Steve Gutenberg. Because it was actually Steve Gutenberg.
Oh, it was.
From
okay.
The Police Academy movies. He lives in
love it.
Pacific yeah. Palisades, apparently.
Good for him.
He tried to fuck my girlfriend one time, but it was
what?
Cool.
I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah. When I was living in New York, my girlfriend
Steve
at the time.
Gutenberg. Tried to fuck
yes,
your girlfriend?
So my girlfriend at the time was walking her roommate's dog, which was this Dalmatian that had diarrhea, and the Dalmatian was having violent diarrhea like all over the sidewalk, and Steve Gutenberg happened to be sitting at like a sidewalk cafe,
and that made him really horny.
Yeah struck like, up a conversation and gave her his phone number and stuff.
That's what you mean by tried to fuck your girlfriend. He talked to her.
Well, he gave her his phone number. Like it wasn't
probably just
like
it.
It wasn't just like hi. It was
maybe
like,
he knows a new dog doctor.
Yeah,
all right, fine. Rachel, what's your favorite advertisement?
Oh, my favorite advertisement is actually a PSA from 1998, okay. And it's a PSA to not do meth.
Oh yeah, I like that one.
It's a song.
People need to know.
Oh, I don't know that one. What's the song?
The song, it says, look at me, busy as a bee. Where'd I get all this energy? Oh, meth. Ooh,
oh,
meth.
Oh, yes.
Remember?
I don't
eat and I don't sleep, but yeah. I got the cleanest house on the street.
Busy as a bee. Where'd I get all this energy? Oh, meth. Meth. I don't sleep and I don't eat, but I've got the cleanest house on the street. Oh, meth. Get these hairs all out of my face. Get these bugs all out of my place. One more hit, no time to waste. Oh, meth. Meth.
When it comes in at the end with the toothbrush, it's like,
oh,
ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. If that's you know, great. You know. Right, Matt?
Well, I never did meth. But
you were a downer guy.
I was a downer guy. So, you know, I took the downers so that I'd feel okay about living in a dirty apartment.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't clean much when you're on heroin.
The thing is you don't clean much when you're on meth either. I mean, you do look like you're cleaning.
You think you're cleaning,
you
but
think
you're really
you're cleaning.
Taking apart electronics. You're trying to reconfigure the microwave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're learning how it all works, but then you forget before you come down.
Exactly. I mean, you're learning about the magic of microwaving, you know?
Yeah.
It rearranges the molecules.
I like that all Gen X humor relies on ironic advertising.
Yeah.
It really does. The 90s were a special time for ads.
Yeah.
I realize how...
it's kind of like a whole generation suddenly realized, you know what? This advertising is kind of bullshit.
Yeah. What about like a joke? But, you know, I do realize that I'm very much inspired, you know, by Gen X jokes. I did
sure.
do it. I did do a song for every episode of The Wire.
Yeah.
You know.
Parody songs are not. That's just classic. That's not Gen X.
That's true.
That's
not Gen X.
That's timeless.
That's timeless. But this is not.
I will say in regards to advertising, there are ads. Like, I don't remember things that happened last week, but I remember the jingle to Dentine Ice. I remember Nothing's Cooler Than Ice, Dentine Ice.
Yes.
I remember, like, tons of ads from
I remember I'm not a chicken, you're a turkey.
Ooh.
I don't remember that. What is that? Is that
that's
an
anti-drug? I remember all the anti-drug slogans.
Yes, yeah. I do remember that.
Hey kid, you like planes? I got something that'll really make you fly.
Oh, it wasn't like do you like playing? How about you start playing with my balls? Yeah, playing with these nuts. It feels like when Vince asks me if I like Wendy's.
Oh yeah, or if you're into fitness.
If I'm into fitness, fitting these nuts
fitness
in your
dick.
Mouth. Yeah.
Nuts or dick.
It can be either, I think.
I learned it from watching You, Dad. That's
I mean, that's a classic one.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go play with my dad's gun. Wasn't that a 70s one?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that was a 90s one. Because I remember that.
One?
Let's go play with my dad's gun. And then the gun goes off.
Yeah.
That was dark.
Yeah, and then I think the PSA was playing, not even once. It was right, it was an anti right. anti-playing PSA.
Yeah, like we can't address the gun part of this. So no, it's not done.
If kids stop playing so much, they always kids play too much. That was the PSA from the Kids Play Too Much Ad Council. Oh, but this is not a show about kids finding a gun in your home and then accidentally committing. No, this is. This is a show about madmen doing advertisements. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chosen. Madman. Drunk. Advertising podcast.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, once again, this is from season one of Mad Men, episode 12, Nixon versus Kennedy. Vince, break us off a little
Kennedy. That's right.
Break us off a little piece of synopsis.
The gang at Sterling Cooper has gathered in the office to watch the Nixon-Kennedy election go down. Meanwhile, Pete brings up Don's past in an attempt to blackmail him, and Don tries to run off to L.A. with his Jap.
Uh-oh.
Jewish American princess.
I get, you know, I never allowed him to say it, but now that he has said it, it works.
It's only a slur if it's used against the Japanese, right?
That's true. I believe that's true.
Otherwise, it's just like WASP.
Yeah, or WAP.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that? White American princess. White Omerta princess. There.
Did you see my WAP joke on Blue Sky?
No. Was it good?
Yeah, I said, who decided to call him paparazzi instead of photo ops?
Oh.
Wow, you're right.
That's a good one.
That is a good one.
That's a good one.
It's very good.
Hey,
you got a joking. Hey, but what was happening?
Hey, I'm joking here.
What was happening at the time that this episode was supposed to have been coming out? But yeah, the episode is set in.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, in my mind, the fire is coming closer and closer, yeah, and I'm panicking.
Mm-hmm. You can feel the heat on his face. I think what you're trying to say is we cannot evaluate a period piece without knowing the context from which it springs. And so we like to put a little of that context back in with a little segment that we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal. There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
News, isn't it?
We're going all the way back to October 12th, 1960. In the news that day, these are all from the Boston Globe. This one's actually from UPI, but Jack accepts network's bid for fifth debate. Jack. Senator John F. Kennedy, convinced he has been helped by the television series, today accepted the offer of two networks for a fifth campaign TV debate with Vice President Richard M. Nixon.
Damn.
Now, this is the first televised debate.
Well, they've had the first televised debate. These are the first. And he's already give me five of them.
Yeah, yeah. He's like.
He likes his debates like he likes his women in multiples.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
They eventually went on to do four, so he didn't actually get that fifth debate.
I thought you were going to say he likes his debate like he likes his partners or whatever. I thought what you were gonna say was with his partner all sweaty.
Sure, yeah, that works too.
Yeah,
sweaty like Don Draper. They didn't get the fifth debate, but we only got one debate this year, so
that worked out great.
We're getting less debates every day. Other news. This one, the headline on this one, also from the Boston Globe, Arctic nuclear plant seen useful on moon.
I'm sorry. Say it again.
Arctic nuclear plant seen useful on moon.
Seen useful?
Mm-hmm.
What'd that mean?
Man may be able to live on the moon because of experience gained in building a nuclear power plant on the Greenland ice cap, two U.S. Army engineers have reported.
Okay.
The nuclear plant on the ice cap was developed because of the supply problem of delivering other types of fuel to Camp Century, the U.S. military Arctic, quote, city under ice. The engineer spoke before a session of the annual convention of American Society of Civil Engineers held at the Statler Hilton. There was once a nuclear plant, or they wanted to build a nuclear plant on this place called Camp Century. Camp Century, this is from the Wikipedia. Camp Century was an Arctic United States military scientific research base in Greenland. Mm-hmm. When built, Camp Century was publicized as a demonstration for affordable ice cap military outposts and a base for scientific research.
Affordable.
Yeah, according to documents declassified
and it's
in
cheap
19.
Too. It's an ice cap.
Classified in 1996, Camp Century was a preliminary camp for Project Iceworm, whose goal was to install a vast network of nuclear missile launch strike sites that could survive a first strike. Missiles were never fielded at the facility, and obtaining the necessary consent from the Danish government to do so was never broached.
Mm.
The camp operated from 1959 until 1967. It consisted of 21 tunnels and was powered by a nuclear reactor. Project Iceworm was aborted after the realization that the ice sheet was not as stable as originally assessed and that the missile basing concept would not be feasible.
I love that. They were just like, you know, here's the problem. What we hadn't considered with ice was how melty it gets at certain times.
Yeah, when you put nuclear stuff in it. The reactor was removed and Camp Century later was abandoned. However, hazardous waste remains buried underneath the ice and has become an environmental concern.
Mm.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay.
I love it. That's an amazing attempt. I like that in the 60s. They were just like, let's just try stuff.
Yeah, that's so true.
I don't know, man. Seems futuristic.
Mm.
Yeah. I know we're going fast. So, okay, well, I'll skip the Estonian defector. We'll save that for the finale. But I do have an American Airlines ad for nonstop flights to Los Angeles, which were new at the time, and I think were relevant to this episode.
Yes.
Quick as you can, and remember, ads in the 60s had lots of words. That's an important thing. Quick as you can say American, what more could a westbound traveler ask? All the conveniences of a 707 jet flagship's 10-mile-a-minute speed. All the comforts of home, and then some. All yours at 1:45 p.m. daily, arriving nonstop at Los Angeles, just 5 hours and 50 minutes later. Wow. And America's little extras make such a big difference, too. Stewardesses who have learned at the world's only stewardess college to treat you graciously.
They got those?
Yeah.
Stewardess College.
Yeah, that's... Matt's mom went to Stewardess College.
What? What seats mean?
Seats designed for extra deep comfort, a gourmet's meal, and a coffee maker that never goes dry. Small wonder American is first choice of experienced travelers.
I love that in the 60s they would just say small wonder in their ads. No one says small wonder anymore.
No.
Everyone just goes like, it's not,
talking about my dude. No,
yeah, small wonder. It's Vince's dick.
Why not take your choice of first class Mercury
still going,
accommodations?
Huh?
Or economical Royal Coachman. You'll find the cost surprisingly low. See your travel agent or call American Airlines in Boston at Liberty 2-6700.
Yeah, that's back when that's how they used to do phone numbers.
Yeah, that was wild stuff.
Yeah, you had to know the number of your exchange.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Phone numbers do be different now.
Oh, phone numbers be tripping. Mm-hmm. You know what's crazy is that they're like, oh, it's only 5 hours and 30-minute flight, and that hasn't changed. How come how come we don't go faster now?
Well, we had a supersonic airline, and then we were like, too hard.
Well, then one of them like crashed, right?
Yeah,
but, and they were like, oh, never mind.
Yeah,
Meanwhile, look at today's flights.
The flights are worse than ever today.
Yeah, it's the same disgusting planes.
Yeah.
Get into
our sardine can.
And what?
It's more seats.
Yeah, they added all these fucking
more seats.
And then, you know, you'll like look and you're like, why is there a fucking welded shut ashtray? And you're like, oh, it's because this, you know, madmen from the 60s used to fucking smoke on these flights.
Yeah.
And then they have the audacity to put that little non-smoking icon. Yeah. It's like, why is this ashtray even here?
Yeah. Why'd you put the ashtray here, idiot?
You know
why
you can't smoke anymore? You know the guy Stan Rogers,
the guy who sang
the sea shanties that we all loved during the pandemic. He died in a ball of flames as a result of someone smoking on a flight and it, you know, doing some igniting the oxygen in the cabin. And
really,
yeah,
whoa,
that's
trivia for you.
That's a little bit of trivia. So wait, are you telling me the reason we don't smoke on flights anymore is like the same reason that
that sea shanties never became as popular as they should be? Yes, that's what I'm saying.
No, that like the same reason why there's paper straws. This was like the version of like the turtle getting the plastic straw out of his nose, except for it was a guy who did sea shanties who exploded in fire. Speaking of fire, it's getting closer and closer, folks. We got to talk about Mad Men. That's what
we
happened
sure
at the time that this episode is set in. So now we're talking about the episode. It is Nixon versus Kennedy. It is Don versus Pete. Who is Nixon? Who is Kennedy? You decide. Vince, what did you think of this episode?
This is a fantastic episode. It's one of the ones that I remember the best from my rewatch or my initial watch a few years ago, which I think is the only true test of art is how well you remember it years later. And it underlines what I've been saying all along. Don is America. He's just a dumb hick who did whatever it took to get money and power. And now none of that past matters. Only presentation matters. Dick 100%. Whitman. Partly through sheer dumb luck, has been reborn as Donald Draper. A bumfuck former English colony, partly through sheer dumb luck, has been reborn as the free world. And none of that luck matters now because it only matters what room that you're in. It's about presenting well, and the key to presenting is the present. None of that other shit matters.
I love it. Rachel, what did you think of this episode?
It's a great episode. Made me profoundly depressed watching it. It's very triggering. How dare you assign this episode to me about an election?
Yes, yes.
It is a great episode though. And I did watch this show for the first time. Like I binge watched the whole series 10 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And from what I remember, I do remember enjoying the episodes that had like a really heavy focus on sort of like the lower tier employees.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah.
I remember liking Kinsey. I remember liking him. Anything with Pete. Pete was always such a compelling character to me.
Agreed.
And seeing him be such a little weenie.
Yeah.
A weenie weasel.
Yeah.
It's like this was like such a perfect Pete moment in this episode.
Yeah. I think Pete is also a perfect portrait of like all the like tech bros who sort of run the economy now in that like their whole, like they have everything, but their whole thing is like, yeah, but why don't people like me? And it's like, well,
right.
They don't like you because you're awkward and you make people feel awkward.
And you keep asking why people don't like you.
Yes.
Yeah.
To everyone.
You're not comfortable with yourself. That's why people don't like you.
Mm-hmm. I love this episode. I'm also very smart and have good analysis. And my analysis is Don Draper like Nixon because he, you know, came from, you know, more humble beginnings. And Pete like Kennedy. And sometimes you got to tell Kennedy where to shove it.
Mm.
I am smart.
What's that, into Marilyn Monroe?
I guess. Well, yeah, shove it into Marilyn Monroe. I really love this episode. It was
idea that like Nixon was like, you know, from a fucking hard scrabble upbringing or whatever. Like,
is he?
No, not really. He was born on a lemon ranch in Orange County.
But he was a Quaker.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I guess.
And also,
I guess
he's a lemon
poor.
Rancher in Orange County.
I guess
County?
The ranch failed, so whatever.
Yeah, I mean, as ranches do. I will admit, so what I like about this episode is finally getting the completed backstory of what happened with Donald Draper, why he became Donald Draper, how he went from Dick Whitman to Donald Draper. And you know, Pete is making all these inferences about, you know, well, he might be
a deserter.
A deserter, you know,
a fraud.
Yeah, a fraud.
But she sort of kind of was a deserter, but not like.
Sure. Yeah. But what I found great about it is, like, at this point in the show, I felt exactly how Bert Cooper felt when he went up to Pete and said, "Who cares?" And I remember feeling that same way when I watched it the first time. Was, you know, after a while, I was just kind of like, you know, unless this is going somewhere, this feels like they just like. It feels like it was a part of the original pitch of Don Draper. He has a secret past.
I liked it. I feel like it was a good reveal, just in that I liked that scene.
It was
definitely
a great reveal. See, that's what I like about this episode, is it reveals what happened. It matches my feeling of kind of like, who cares, you know, mm-hmm. Pete keeps saying, like, you know, this is going to blow up your whole life. And all I could think of was like, I don't know if it will, you know.
No, and I feel like that's like the larger truth that this speaks to, is like whatever thing that you think is like some deep, dark secret. Like if you just said it out loud, most of the time people will be like, yeah, all right. Yeah, like if he just told the story about like, yeah, this guy died by accident and he had, you know, a lot less time to serve in this war, so I just switched the dog tags and so I could get out early. I feel like Bert Cooper would have been like, "Oh, cool story, good job."
Yeah. So it is like, and I do love the reveal of what exactly happened. And literally, they were under attack, and Don Draper pissed himself, and he's right about to smoke a cigarette, and the real Don Draper tells him he pissed himself, and then he foolishly just starts wiping his pants. I don't know what the move was about. Why would you touch the piss?
Because he didn't believe that he actually pissed himself. So he was like, "What? Wait, maybe this isn't piss. Maybe there's some other explanation."
No,
for
it's
this.
Calm.
Someone else pissed in my pants.
Yeah, this is just cum. And then in him wiping, you know, the piss with his hand, he drops the lighter and it explodes everything. It's so cartoonish.
It's so dramatic.
It's like it's played for the drama of it, but I was just like, yeah, I can see him wanting to keep this a secret, not just because of the switching of the dog tags, but also because it's fucking an embarrassing way to frag here to do friendly fire.
How many deaths are actually like Looney Tunes ass situations like this? Probably
in
a lot.
War, probably most. But I loved it. And I also really love Rachel in this episode. Rachel being the voice of reason when he like is freaking out and he's just like, "Let's run away," and then she's just like,
she's like, "What about your kids?"
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh god,
oh, the kids.
Well, why do women always talk when I'm just trying to run away scared?" He's, you know, he's such a pussy about it. And Rachel, I love that Rachel is a level-headed person, and it's just like, also fuck you.
Yeah, like, I also took from it, it's sort of like the thing where the Irish are immune to psychotherapy or whatever. Right. I feel like there's something about her where she's like, yeah, you know, I'm Jewish. We're like immune to your dumb wasp platitudes. Like they don't, you can't sell those here. Sorry.
Yeah, we've been in therapy since we were in second grade.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Freud came from us.
That's right.
My dad keeps saying Freud is a hack. He's like, I've been fucking my mother. But... Let's get into this episode. But before you do,
I heard you guys talking about therapy. We could probably run some ads for BetterHelp or something.
Yes, we all love it when you go online and you're like, I'm going to hurt myself or others, and then you go on BetterHelp.com. and you sign up to talk,
and you get
to
a chatbot that says, "I'm sorry, you're feeling suicidal.
Yeah, give me money." So please, if you're thinking of wasting a little bit of money before you die, go to BetterHelp.com. No, stick around. We're gonna listen to some ads. We'll be right back.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man, show about Mad Men's. And we're here with Rachel Fisher of the Hollywood Crime Scene Podcast. There is a fire raging near my body. And we're going to talk about what happened in this episode. We start off with Don Draper introducing Bert Cooper to Duck Phillips, who used to work at a British firm and apparently had some sort of meltdown, and he is going to take this job that Pete really wants to get, and that is going to come in play later in this episode. Everyone at the office is basically, they're all excited to have a let's watch the election returns party, mm-hmm. which is still a thing to this day. People still do that.
It must have sucked back then before Steve Kornacki could roll up his sleeves and we could have a Wolf Blitzer hologram.
Exactly.
And online conspiracy theories in real time.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it must have been so boring just watching people calculate different things when instead you could be on Twitter hearing about how everything is fake and the election is being stolen.
I mean, this is aspirational. It just goes to show that, like, Democrats used to be the ones who did the cheating and the winning, and now all they do is bitch to the teacher.
I know. When it's clear that Kennedy is going to win and Bert Cooper is just like, he paid off Mayor Daley to, get a bunch of votes from dead people or whatever. I was just like, God, we used to be great. What happened?
Yeah.
What happened to this country? Sometimes you have to do a little bit of crime in order to stop big crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those are the days. So, this is fairly centered around what's going on with the election. At least there's two halves to this. It's the night of the election and then the hangover after. We get this party that's happening at the Sterling Cooper office, and it is like a classic 60s sexual harassment hijinks party.
Mm-hmm.
They're like raiding.
Wait, did we forget to ask Rachel what color panties she's wearing today?
Oh yeah.
Brent's gonna have to chase you around the
we have to chase you around, scare you, threaten your job, and then ask you what color panties you're wearing. And if you don't tell us immediately, we will hike up your skirt because that's okay.
I'm not wearing underwear. I'm wearing sweatpants. I was at Disneyland for 14 hours yesterday and I'm lazy.
Oh my God. You went to Disneyland for 14 hours?
Yeah.
I guess if you're going to go, you got to go.
Approximately. You gotta go. It's expensive.
Yes.
Wanna get your money's worth. I did also spend a lot of money eating fried food.
Yeah, it's expensive.
It was expensive. And then towards the end of the night, it was like, it's like really scary in LA. The fires are happening.
Oh yeah, that's right.
No, not Disneyland. But I
it's like there's this Jack Skellington guy who keeps coming.
But I will say that my favorite ride, which is the Indiana Jones ride, it did break down right when Indiana Jones is hanging over you on the rope.
Oh, wow.
And nice. He's like, you fucking idiot. And he's scolding you for looking in the eye of at the temple of the eye.
Yeah.
It just stopped. So we had like a nice shot of his balls.
Nice.
Dangling yeah. over the Jeep.
You got teabagged by
teabagged by Dr. Jones.
For free.
Lifelong fantasy of mine.
Hell Indiana yeah. cojones.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's quite a party going on over at the Mad Men office. The men, they're acting mad. And you know, Peggy wants nothing to do with it. She leaves early. And Harry Crane, this is a Harry Crane. We get more Harry Crane than I think we've ever had. We know him as the Sterling Cooper wife guy. Mm-hmm. He is the one who keeps talking about how much he loves his wife. He tells everyone, you know, oh, I love my wife. You know me. Loving wives. And
turns out nothing gets a secretary hotter than you loving your wife.
Yeah, it turns out that really works for Hildy. And so, like, you know, they're watching the returns, fucking they're drinking like it's like
creme de menthe and rum out of a water jug, which is they're just that making jungle shit. Juice.
Yeah. It looks like fucking Listerine, and it looks disgusting, but they're having a great time. Everyone's getting horny. They're chasing after each other. So after I think it's Nixon is announced to win Ohio, Harry Crane kisses Hildy, and he's the one who does it. When I rewatched this episode, I was like, I remember that they kiss. I wonder if Hildy did it. No, Harry does it. Mr. Wife Guy, Mr. Oh, I Love My Wife, what does he do? He kisses another woman.
Yeah, but she was tempting him.
By being hot and existing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, she had those eyes that just said, I want to be kissed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She, the consent is in the eyes. We all know that, legally. So he kisses her. They're kissing each other. And he like goes to his office. He's all like, oh God, I gotta call my wife. And
what's happening to my pants?
What's happening? My pee pee hurt. And so he goes in, he's touching his penis, and then
Hildy says, get a load of these. And he's like, what?
Yeah, wonga, wonga, wonga. No, like Hildy walks in and is like, I'm sorry. And he like
apologizes.
Yeah, she apologizes throughout. This entire exchange between Hildy and Harry is so annoying at how many times she apologizes to
and
him.
And he's just moping around feeling sorry for himself. Like he didn't set this entire fucking thing in motion.
Right. Like he didn't like continually multiple times like do this. Like she comes in. He's got his glasses off. And she's like, your eyes are, I've never seen your eyes before or whatever.
And there's two of them. And what did he say?
Yeah, he's like, oh.
Yeah, there they are. There's both like, of
oh,
them.
Oh, better look at your titties with my dear.
I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Stop trying to be cute.
Yeah. It was too cute. He was just like, there they are, just the two of them. And and then they make out again. And at this point, you know, he fucking knows, like he knows what he's doing. And later they wake up and she's on top of him. It's like the morning after he's hungover. He's got a half naked Hildy on top and he just mopes. This reminds me in college of the one time I slept with an ex-girlfriend and I felt really bad about it. I just started crying.
What? Yeah. Were you single?
No, I wasn't. But I had met another girl. I'm maybe revealing too much. Probably all the smoke and fire.
No, I want to hear this.
Well, so I had met another woman down in LA over the summer when I worked at a Jew camp, and I came back up for my second year, and then I saw my ex-girlfriend and then we slept together again. And then I was so filled with guilt over cheating that I just started crying. And I was such a bitch about it. Like, I wasn't mad at her, but I wasn't like yelling at her or anything like that. But I was just like, I straight up started crying. and I'm like, you know. So when I see Harry Crane just like moping around, you know, it's like, I'm just like,
it's cringe inducing.
It's cringe inducing. Yes, I've been there. It reminds me of myself. But you know, I was a 19, I was a baby. What is I going to do? I can't be held accountable. I was too baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the difference is, and we'll find this out in the next episode, is I'm pretty sure that Harry told his wife, because he's in the doghouse in the next episode. Like, he's literally sleeping in the office.
Well, he did stay all night at the office and then arrive home with broken glasses. I'm sure his wife wasn't like...
You think his wife pieced that together?
She knew something bad happened. I mean, it wasn't, yeah, even if he damning. Didn't admit, even if he didn't admit to cheating, she's like, wow, you're either a cheater or just a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smelling like creme de menthe.
Yeah. You smell like creme de menthe and pussy. Get out of my home.
You smell like cum de menthe.
cum de menthe. yeah, it's, I'm not sure if she knew my guess is he told her and, you know, that's probably not a good move, but
because
you know,
I bet he did, because he's the kind of guy
who would.
He's the kind of guy who would, because like, oh, that felt so good for me to get that off my chest. Yeah, I had to get that off my chest. Now I've hurt other people.
I've hurt you.
Yes. But I feel so relieved.
Yeah. But I'm good now. Don't you know I'm good? I said sorry and I admitted. Now you have to carry it.
Yes.
See? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
This is better. Better for everyone. Yeah. So that is Harry's storyline in this episode. It's pretty great. Meanwhile, Pete is at the office. He's seeing this guy, Duck Phillips, and he's having none of it.
Can we talk about the initial interaction? I should have had you pull this clip, but there's like the...
I couldn't pull clips.
Duck's initial
meeting... Everything on fire.
Right.
Yeah.
Duck's initial... meeting with Bert Cooper, and Bert Cooper is like into him, and then he asks him who he's voting for, and like Duck tries to make a joke out of it, and then all of a sudden like Bert sort of turns on him, where he's like, yeah, I don't like this guy anymore. Right. It was interesting, because it was, I don't know, I still don't understand quite what made Cooper turn on him, but he clearly had a moment where he was like, yeah, I don't like this guy anymore.
I have that clip.
Guards close to the vest with clients.
I will keep that in mind.
Here's a test. Who'd you vote for?
If I say Nixon, you'll think I'm buttering you. If I say Kennedy, you'll want to reform me. So, I'll say Nixon.
That's nice to say.
And then he just stares at him. Yeah, it is interesting. I think at this point, Cooper is channeling his inner like Ayn Rand, you know, like he knows he's got Duck by the balls, which means he can pay him whatever he wants. They're bargain hunting is, you know, what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think he knows. I mean, Duck just admitted, he's like, you know, you want me to say this and I want this job. So Nixon,
he'll do anything.
And yeah. And I think Cooper likes that. He doesn't respect that, but he likes it for now. And kind of, you know, later in the episode, Bert has this moment where he, you know, he's like, you can fire Pete if you want, but maybe keep an eye on him, because who knows how loyalty is born. I think he has a thing where he's like, okay, this guy Duck is like, he's a gun for hire. He's not going to be loyal. He's just going to be a yes man. He's going to say whatever I want. And I don't know if he totally likes that, but he can get him for cheap. That's my guess.
And I think the decision to keep Pete and to not fire him is such a power move, because it's like, this is how little confidence I have in your ability to actually fuck someone over.
Yeah.
We're not scared of you.
Yeah.
We're going to like keep, come on. Calm down.
Well, it's like the amazing old LBJ quote where you're like, I don't trust a guy until I can put his pecker in my pocket or whatever he said. It's like, yeah.
He's
got,
what?
He's got is, ducks.
Yeah. Is that what he said?
Yeah.
His pecker in my pocket.
I don't trust a guy until I can take his dick and just hold it in my mouth for a little bit just to feel what it tastes like. Just so I can describe the taste back to him.
I never trust a man unless I've got his pecker in my pocket. Yeah, that's the quote.
All right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. And that's Pete and Duck. It's like, yeah, got it right here.
Yeah, well, Peter Piper picked a pecker.
Pecker.
Mm-hmm. Peck of pickled peppers.
And that's hard to keep in your pocket because ducks' penises are like weird corkscrew, little corkscrews.
Famously
yeah.
corkscrew dicks. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
They are corkscrew dick. there is... Yeah, so Pete is pissed. He's at home. You know, he asks first, if Don will maybe consider him because he's got so many qualifications. Like, he's been there for 2 years and he has a rich family. And, you know, Don is actually being kind of charitable to him in these moments because he's being, you know, very pushy and he's just like, look, you're good at what you do. Can you just like calm down basically? Yeah. Like you're gonna rise in this company. Like stop tripping. And Pete, you know, suffers from the thing that I think a lot of young ambitious people do is like, why can't I be your boss? You know, it's very like, what, you're not so great. And he is feeling a lot of resentment because he has this thing he thinks is going to fix everything, which is a bunch of evidence that Don Draper is actually Dick Whitman, and he's sitting at home in his pajamas, and he's sitting on a couch looking through pictures of his boss. Very normal thing. And his wife comes in and is like, Pete, you're weird.
Yeah. No, yeah. This is very peculiar because they're both very mid-Atlantic, you know. This is,
yes.
You're being very peculiar. She also says, my father had a box like that. I looked at it once and it was a mistake. And I was like,
what
did he have in there? Was
it
just
porn?
Like,
it's pictures of him. It's porn, right?
I was thinking it was like him dancing naked with like a bunch of like gory, like Japanese war trophies that he had or something.
Well, that's,
I don't know,
very dark.
That went darker than I thought.
It's a picture of war photos and like, and
war
dog
crimes.
Tags.
I assume.
Yeah, I feel like he had some war crimes in
war
there.
War crime photo?
Maybe. I assume when she said a shoebox like that, like a hidden shoebox with stuff in it, it just meant like, you know, you go in the closet, you see the shoebox, you open
stag
it up.
Stag party photos.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Yes. It's like, you know, it's like sex tapes that he made with him and other women. That's what I think it is. Although, I don't know if you could do sex tapes back in the day. You had to get like a guy...
You had to hire someone.
That seems hard. Maybe it was like you and the girl would draw each other having sex.
Is he has a collection of drawings as well as photographs.
Yes, it's a collection of drawings and photographs of his own penis.
His own penis and men from the Elk Lodge.
Yes, Elk Lodge.
He
man.
Was like an elk.
Yes, yes.
And they have their stag parties.
Naked men and fezzes.
And fezzes
doing homoerotic dances. Either way, whatever she saw was probably a lot weirder than what she saw in Pete's box, which was just like clearly someone else's stuff. and
she's almost more horrified that it's not porn. That's yeah, the subtext. Yeah. She's like, you're just obsessing over your
yes,
boss.
Yes, she's not exactly sure what's going on with Pete at this moment, other than like, I get that you really like your boss or hate your boss, you're obsessed with him, that's the point,
Pete. I wish it was porn.
Yeah Pete, next time just have it be pictures of penises and vaginas, please. And she's like, you know,
have a box full of your secretary's panties like a normal guy.
Yeah, like a normal
that's
guy
normal.
You fucking weirdo. And she kind of is like, you know, get it out of here one way or the other. And the one way he chooses is, the next day he walks into, Dawn's office, first gets yelled at the second time by Peggy, and Peggy's like, excuse me, like, I have to announce you, that's my job. And he's like, you better be careful how you talk to me. I'm about to be the president of this company. I have a shoebox that has documents. And yeah, he walks in and is like, you know, have you given more thought? And Dawn is like, no. And then he closes the door and he reveals to him his deep, dark secret about the box. I have the box. I will use the box. Don't make me use the box. Yeah, it is, you know, at this moment, I'd probably like play a clip, but then fire happened.
Well, he says, you said everything but your else. Like, he knows he's being blackmailed.
Yes.
And Don's freaked out at first because he's like, oh, man. He knows he's freaked out, and he makes, like, a sort of transparent attempt to intimidate Pete, which I think is the right move, which is, like, someone trying to blackmail you, and you could be like, okay, I could also kill you to keep this covered up. Like, what do you think, you know?
Right. He says something like, you have to think of what else I might be willing to do to keep this secret. And he's like, yep, I had not considered that. That's a good point. But Pete, to his credit,
he knows he can't back down in this situation. He's already, he's already played his hand. He can't, like, take it back now.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, you know, it's not a threat. I'm not blackmailing you. I'm just saying, give me this job or I will destroy your life.
And it's like a statement to Don's character, because it wouldn't be hard for him to just give Pete the job that he would probably do an okay job at, despite not being qualified for it. But Don's like, no, I can't let him win. Yeah. I can't let you win. That's part of my character.
But he's also right, though.
No, for sure.
Yeah. He's 100% right. That just, like, guys like Pete don't deserve anything that they have.
Right.
And he knows this, and he's just like, I even think that, like, he really would rather blow up his own life than let a snake like that walk around in the same office with him.
Yeah.
Ill-gotten gains.
I think if Pete was just a little more smooth with it, Don would probably respect it. But yeah, the fact that Pete has no guile, and, like, their entire job is, like, guile and manipulation, he's like, no, I cannot reward you for this.
He's a weenie.
Yeah.
He's
a super weenie. And Don is scared, and he's not revealing that he's scared, but, you know, in the moment. But he runs over to Rachel Menken's office and is like, let's run away together. And I do have a clip of that a little bit.
No, this isn't how I thought it would be.
What is the difference? We'll go somewhere else. We'll start over, like Adam and Eve.
What are you, 15 years old? My father... Can't we be together here?
There's nothing here.
What about your children?
I'll provide for them.
And live in Los Angeles? My God, you haven't thought this through.
Now, that is a great, great line, because this reminds me a lot of The Sopranos, where, like, Dr. Melfi would say something really smart, or like just a good, you know, phrase. You haven't thought this through, and then, you know, Tony would go and use it on other people. Ends up using this exact line on Pete. This "you haven't thought this through" line, and it, like, it does get Pete to, like, stop and think, like, have I thought this through?
Because it's true. Because all people. Yeah.
Sorry. Much like Tony Soprano, Don doesn't internalize it for himself, for his own actions maybe I should think things through. He's like, oh, how can I weaponize this?
Right. Yes. Right.
Somebody else.
Yeah.
And he does successfully.
When someone tells you to, you know, you haven't thought this through, all he can think of is like, ouch, that hurts. You're right. And now I feel insecure. How can I use this on Pete later?
Right. I won't change my actions.
No. I'm going to continue that scene, though.
I feel sick.
You're wrong. I know exactly what I want.
You want your children to go on without a father? You know how that felt.
Are you having an attack of conscience after all this?
No. I'm watching you talk because I feel I don't know you.
You know more about me than anyone.
You won't even tell me what happened.
That is such a fucking, that is so perfect in that moment, because he's like, he's so full of shit. You know more about me than anyone in the world. Why? Because you admitted to one person that, oh, they used to call me horse child. And he's using this like manipulation tactic, and she's just like, I don't even know why you're here. I don't even know why you're being like this right now. It is, oh God, I love her.
It's so perfect. She's so like embarrassed she ever let him stick his dick inside of her in this moment. And it's great.
Yes, she's embarrassed for herself, but also embarrassed for him.
Yes.
It's so great.
I just love What About Your Children? Because it is, it's like, you think you're being so romantic right now, but you're actually being like the most embarrassing piece of shit ever.
Yes. Yes. And the fact that she even has to talk him into remembering that his children should be considered. Like, that is, oh, it's so great.
I mean, we see, so there's another Dawn moment in this episode, which I think relates to the same thing, is like, while all the Sterling Cooper people are having this big jungle juice party, he goes home. And, Betty and his daughter are watching the election returns on TV, and his daughter asks him about the Electoral College. And like Dawn says something like, oh, I don't think that's a conversation we should be having with children.
That's not appropriate for children.
And it's the like Electoral College.
You can read that two ways, where he's like, yes, thinking is not something girls should do. But also you could read it as Dawn is still like kind of an uneducated hick, and I don't think he believes that he could credibly explain what the Electoral College actually is either.
I like that. That one.
Like it's misogyny, but also a deflection.
I love that. I think that's right. I think that's 100% right. Because, I think Dawn is, he's someone who has the ability to sound like he knows, has insight into things. He can make himself sound smart. Everything with him is presentation, but you're right. He probably doesn't know shit.
Yeah, there's still some part of him that is slightly ashamed that he didn't go to prep school.
Right. Yes, exactly. So Rachel tells him, get the fuck out of the office. Get out of my workplace. Mm-hmm. Dawn returns back, and Peggy's in his office crying. And she is sad because she's being, the day after the party, some money was stolen. Her mad money was stolen from her locker.
What the fuck is mad money?
I don't know what.
It's like spending cash.
I guess that makes sense.
It's like for fun.
That's
right?
Probably like funsies? I think it's gotta be. It's probably what the show Mad Money was named after. Kramer, Jimmy Kramer.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm gonna go to the movies with this.
Yeah, exactly. This is my mad money. I'm gonna spend it on weed or meth. So she's crying because she's like, I try so hard to be good. I ended up getting someone else fired for this because I complained, to the office manager or whatever.
And they were immediately like, well, it was probably one of the black guys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's literally what happened. And she feels terrible about it. And in general, she's just like sad that life isn't fair. And I'm not sure what's happening in that moment, but I think in that moment he decides, like, I gotta stop crying like a girl. That's my guess.
No, he is in that moment that he realizes, wait a second, I'm a white guy and it's 1960.
Yeah, I can do anything.
Ain't nobody can tell me shit.
I'll just blame Korea on some black elevator operator.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't have stolen his identity, but this black guy. And they'll believe me. Yeah. So,
and it was a black guy who dropped him off there.
That's right.
We forget.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
There's a few of these like flashback scenes of like him in Korea, which, like I said, the best part of that is when he pisses himself. She's being you know, he's trying not to yell at a crying woman, which is nice of him. And so then Don talks to Pete and he tells him, you know, hey, I did consider it, but then I remember that you're a piece of shit and you lack character. And this is where we have the you haven't thought this through conversation, which is very good. And I have a little bit of it.
I can understand your frustration, Don. Believe me, I'm not enjoying this any more than you are.
I'm hiring Duck Phillips.
Don, don't make me go to Cooper.
I'm not making you do anything. You haven't thought this through.
I have.
Really? You're just going to go up to the office and tell Bert Cooper?
If I have to. I don't want to.
Well, let me ask you. How do you think he'll react when you tell him this story of yours? You expect him to promote you? After the way you've behaved?
I think he'll appreciate the loyalty.
You haven't thought this through.
I love that. Mm-hmm. He's so sexy. He's just hot. I mean, what can you say? The way he says
he
stuff.
He's hot.
I like him. I love my wife, though. So he tells him, you know, what are you going to go do? Go tell Cooper? And then he does. He just like starts power walking over to the office and Pete is like lumbering behind him like, excuse me, this was not part of the plan. And yeah, and Pete says, you know, you would rather blow your life up than give me what I want. It's just a fucking job. And Don is like, yeah, I would. I hate you. Look at your stupid, ugly, round face. You know?
Yeah.
I love that.
And Cooper's like, yeah, I don't care. Fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah. Cooper, he goes to, you know, the office and Cooper is like, oh, great. You're hiring Duck Phillips. What else? Why are you still here? And it's finally Pete's moment to shine.
Why are you interrupting my massage? I have anime porn to look at.
Yeah, exactly. I am trying to watch this tentacle porn. It's hentai. And Pete, like, you know, hasn't fully rehearsed this moment of actually revealing it expects it to go very different. And so does Don. Don expects it to go very differently. When Bert Cooper says, who cares? Don's face is like, what? Me? Excuse?
That matters is the room that you're in. It doesn't matter. Exactly. He's already here.
The Japanese have a phrase.
He's got a seat at the table.
Arigato gozaimasu. And it means whatever room you're in, that's who you are.
So we know that Cooper is a big Ayn Rand guy. Yeah. The other thing that we didn't discuss during the party is Kinsey's
one-act play.
Kinsey's one-act play
that
he's written,
great.
Which is so good. And I love that they go from, well, it goes from Cosgrove sexually assaulting this underling to see what color her panties are. And obviously, like, that works. So they have to go. They have to go into Kinsey's office to immediately fuck. And while they're in there, he discovers Kinsey's one act play. And Kinsey is, you know, he's upset at first because he's embarrassed. But then he realizes that this is fraternity rules. You just got to play along with the joke. And he does. And so
to his credit. Yeah,
we didn't see the part where he goes from being embarrassed to deciding to play along. I feel like that must have got left on the cutting floor, or maybe they were just like, ah, you'll get it anyway. Yeah. So they do it. They start performing the play with Sal, obviously, because, you know, Sal's obviously into theater. He's like, okay, an opportunity to be theatrical.
Yeah.
But I bring it up because one of the characters in his play is named Galt, which is an Ayn Rand character.
100%
and I was like,
John
oh man,
Galt.
Is Kinsey also an Ayn Rand guy with
100%
in addition to Cooper?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I think at that time, I imagine there was a time before the popularization of like modern American libertarianism where like Ayn Rand is God, where people were just reading Atlas Shrugged like it was any other book. So
yeah.
I mean, at least I think. I don't know. But
which I did. I did that back in the day. I read like The Fountainhead and I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's got a point. Committees are bullshit because it's as much about being an obnoxious artist as anything else.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read it. I've heard there's a lot of fucking in it.
Really?
That's what I heard.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that being true.
Yeah. Which,
it's been a long time. But yes.
If there's a lot of fucking, then I'm into it. I'll join whatever political cult you want if there's a lot of fucking, you know what I mean? The fire's getting close. So,
but it's like one of those things, like there's a lot of books that you can read. If you just read it as a book, you're like, oh yeah, that was a good story. Like when I read fucking J.D. Vance's book, I was like, okay,
that's a cool your whole life.
That's a cool story about Appalachian dysfunction. And I'm happy to read about that. I didn't like think like, oh man, the like two sentences about welfare being bad are going to become like my new worldview.
Yeah. I think that was like so many people's response to that book because they enjoyed it as a story.
Yeah.
Like a sort of peek into this world.
100%. Yeah. And you know, it fed, I think, a desire to like get outside of the liberal city bubble with every piece of writing, especially in the world of like popular literature.
Yes.
And then of course, this is what happens. You give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want to be vice fucking president.
Yeah.
God damn it.
This is why we should stick to liberal elitism. Just kidding.
No, it's why you don't let Pete become the fucking account manager.
Exactly. It's why you put him in his fucking place.
It's like, hey, cool, or Cosgrove or whatever. Like, hey, cool story about tapping a maple tree, bro. Get back to your office.
Back to your office. Right the slop. Pete is embarrassed. He's an embarrassing man. And then we get the rest of Don's backstory. He pissed himself, he dropped the lighter, it killed the real Don Draper. He switched to dog tags. Embarrassing. He wakes up and they're like, "You're Don Draper now." And he's like, "It worked." And they're like, "Oh, but also you have to go bury Dick Whitman." And he's like, "Oh, how am I gonna get out of this one?" And he's on the train and he just goes, "I can't do it. I can't face him." They're like, "It's all right. It's fine." They're right there. And earlier in the season, when he's like an older guy and he meets up with Don, he's like, "I knew I saw you that day in the window." I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, maybe he like saw him from afar, you know, through like a window. Yeah, I don't know. Like at a store or something, he was in a car. The fact that he was just on the train and he's looking through the window and he's like,
no one's believing him.
And no one's believing him. And I'm just like, "Don, you're an asshole. You made eye contact with him multiple times."
He gaslit this child.
Yeah.
For years.
He gaslit the fuck out of him. And it's so funny because he's like, you can tell he has this moment on the train where he's looking at Adam. And Adam is just like, "It's him. He's right there on the train." And
his mom's like, "Shut the fuck up."
He's like, "Shut up, kid.
Are you being annoying again?"
"Yeah, I'm trying to abuse you." And and he's like, not sure what he's going to do. And then this random hot lady is just like, "Don't worry. Dead people are dead. You're alive and can still do fucky. Do you want to go get a drink?" And he's just like, in that moment, he chooses sex over family.
Yes.
And I just like, it's so great. I love watching it just because he's just like, "Well, I can't say hi to my little brother. I've already made this switch, you know? I'm already this other guy. Plus, there's this really hot babe who wants to bang." Sometimes you got to do what you got to do in this crazy world of ours. I like to think that's when he lost his virginity.
That was the moment he truly switched. Because Dick Whitman was a virgin loser.
Yeah, yep. Dick Whitman was a virgin incel loser.
The virgin Dick Whitman and the Chad Don Draper.
The Chad Don Draper, exactly. And that's the moment that his Chad transformation was complete. Unfortunately for Adam Whitman, who ends up committing suicide for whatever reason. And Don comes home to see Betty asleep during Nixon's concession speech, and credits roll. And that is what happened in this wonderful episode of Mad Men, if I had to give it a letter grade, and I do, I'm going to give this one a solid B+. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorite episodes. Ergo, solid B+.
Wow, I didn't expect that. I thought you were going to say something. Rachel Fisher, what would you give this episode in terms of a letter grade if you had to? What'd you do?
This episode was stacked. It had so many iconic moments. That's why I'm giving it a B+.
Oh my God. Again, she admitted it is a B+ episode of Mad Men and an A+++++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Rachel Fisher, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Thank you as always for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to see you.
You didn't do favorite, least favorite.
Oh,
well, what's that?
That's when we say our favorite or least favorite. But that's because the fire is coming close, Vince.
Oh, it's knocking. You're not going to burn.
What's your favorite?
I really liked when Flo from Progressive is watching the panty game, and she's like, "I used to think I'd find a husband here," and then Peggy says,
is like, I'm gonna leave,
and she's like, no, it's gonna be so fun.
yeah. And then later she like runs out of the office of one of the dudes, right? Didn't she fuck a dude, or am I wrong? It was a different man.
She was doing a little jig with the boys.
Yeah,
during the,
maybe
during
she
their
wasn't
conga
one
line.
Of the ones who fucked.
She might have, who knows.
Rachel, do you have a favorite or least favorite scene?
Favorite was the chunks of creme de menthe in the trash can.
Yes, that was
congealed.
That was nice.
Creme de menthe chunks.
Congealed.
Looked like mint jelly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Rachel, where can people find you on
Hollywood Crime Scene Podcast?
Okay.
Everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Everywhere where you listen to podcasts. It's a great podcast, everyone. If you haven't started listening, you should, because at this point you've had both Rachel and Ezzy on the show multiple times. You are fucking up if you haven't listened. A link in the bio. Rachel.
Thank you.
Love you so much. Thank you.
I love you guys too.
And we love all of you out there. Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy. Patreon.com/rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out, and not just a shout out, but you get a good old boy name and possibly a prep school name. Sure, I guess. Good old boy is different than prep school, and then possibly also like a product slogan if I could do it, and I can. So we have a few, starting with a $20 patron.
Whoa,
Corey.
Holy shit.
Corey De La Cruz.
Oh, Corey De La Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
We call him De La Soul.
Oh, okay, that's what the.
Because it's really soulful to give us $20.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. Corey, quite contrary. How does your garden glory? De La Cruz. De La Soul. All right, you already did it. All right, three more. We have Charles Kutz.
Charles Kutz?
K-U-T-Z, Kutz.
Oh, he's cutting. He's cutting it all up. We call this guy the butcher.
Oh, this guy, if you need a cut-up, get yourself a Chucky cut at Charles Kutz Grocers. We know the right cut to make you nut. All right. next is Emily Marziani.
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 Hey, men are from Marziani, women are from Venusiani. we call Emily here, we call her the astronaut. She's going to Marziani.
Oh, hey, if you're trying to go to Marziani, make sure you take a Tesla SpaceX flight straight to the moon. I don't know, man. Emily Marziani. If you like to eat your Parmigiani, call yourself Emily Marziani. All right. Last one. It is Eric Weiss, who is a longtime patron of ours, who is begging us to just not do a Barry Weiss joke, but any other kind of nickname we want.
Okay. Okay.
Eric Weiss.
I never made it as a Weiss man. yeah. We call... Wait, what was I going to... Which way was I going to go with? He's not a Weiss. He's not a Weiss man. We call him... call him Dingbat because he's not so wise.
Yeah, not so wise. Hey, this is Eric Weiss. The three blind Weiss.
My Weiss.
My Weiss. One a penny, two a penny, three. Well, that's hot cross buns. What do the three blind mice sing?
Three blind mice. That's all the words I remember.
That's all I remember.
Going
too.
To the store.
There's
doing
no store.
Some mice stuff. I don't know.
Doing
what they
some
do,
mice stuff. Oh boy. Anyways, so that is all of the shout outs for this week. If you want to get yourself a shout out, we have one more episode left. So please get them in now. $8 tier, patreon.com/Farotcast.
Broadcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. The fire's coming.
Stay not on fire.
Stay not on fire. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
I fucking loathe you. This is the shittiest song I've ever heard. I thought, like, the actual song would be good. Like, nah, this sucks.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.